The nuns were selective in who they targeted. For me, they kept trying to break my spirit.
The amount is over $100,000.
There's a great deal of mistrust between community people and the Albany Police Department. There's a great deal of mistrust between the Albany County District Attorney's Office and the community.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. On this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, a new report shows lasting mistrust between Albany residents and law enforcement. A longtime Great Barrington, Massachusetts town official is arraigned on embezzlement charges. And the first lawsuits are filed under New York's Child Victims Act. We'll start there. A number of people and locations associated with the Roman Catholic Diocese of Albany have been cited in the first lawsuits under New York's Child Victims Act. Bishop Edward Scharfenberger released the following statement, as former Bishop Howard Hubbard was among those named in the legal actions.
We support all survivors in the justice and healing that they seek, but our mission goes way beyond. Our common mission also involves protection and prevention, continuing to create conditions so that all are protected from sins and crimes of sexual abuse and its ravages, especially our children and our most vulnerable adults.
And it was an emotional day Wednesday as hundreds of childhood sexual abuse survivors filed lawsuits in New York courts on the start of a one-year window of opportunity for victims to seek legal action against abusers. Capitol correspondent Karen DeWitt reports.
My beginning started in June. Sorry.
It's all right.
1957. And it ends today.
Suzanne Robertson and her two sisters were orphans at St. Coleman's home in Watervliet in upstate New York, where she says they were routinely abused by the nuns and other staff there. When one of the sisters reported the sexual abuse to a nun at the home, she was transferred to an orphanage for mentally disabled children.
The nuns were selective in who they targeted. For me, they kept trying to break my spirit. It didn't work then, and it won't work now.
Jack Caesar says he was abused by the janitor, Eugene Hubert, at the St. Teresa of Avila School in Albany.
What happened to me changed my life and put me on a path of sexual destruction and internal hell. But the end of the cover-up stopped here.
Caesar, Robertson, and her siblings, and others who say they are victims of childhood sexual abuse filed suit against the Roman Catholic Diocese of Albany, claiming that the diocese knew of the abuse and did nothing to stop it. The legislation that is spurring the lawsuits, the Child Victims Act, was approved earlier this year by Governor Andrew Cuomo and the legislature. It allows victims to bring criminal charges against an alleged abuser up until they reach the age of 28, and they can initiate civil action until they are 55 years old. The one-year window allows thousands of survivors who aren't covered by the new rules and who were barred from court action in the past to bring civil lawsuits. They have from August 14, 2019, until August 13, 2020. The survivor's attorney, Dan Ellis of Herman Law Firm, says his firm has compiled a list of 500 priests across New York State who have been accused of sexual abuse.
We're hearing from hundreds of victims across the state who no longer have to suffer in silence.
Ellis's firm is one of several filing cases Wednesday. Anderson Law Firm filed 262 cases in nearly every Roman Catholic diocese in New York. The Marsh Law Firm has over 500 clients that are also filing claims against the Catholic Church, the Boy Scouts of America, and several Boy Scout councils in New York, and 200 claims against Rockefeller University Hospital over alleged abuse by Dr. Reginald Archibald. He ran a clinic there for children with growth problems. Ellis says the next step is to help his clients prove their case in court. He says that will involve the victims telling their stories to a judge and in some cases a jury, and it will also include depositions from officials in the diocese. He says they hope to uncover more evidence of sexual abuse that he believes has been hidden.
We still think that the diocese across the country are withholding files and complaints based on known perpetrators. We don't think all the records are out there. Now, the diocese have said they've turned over all of their records to the attorneys general, and that might be so, but those records aren't made public yet. And these victims have a right to know of that the public has a right to know, and these documents, we believe, are still secret.
The New York State Attorney General's office announced over a year ago that they had begun an investigation of sexual abuse in the Catholic Church, but so far they have not made any information public. The Catholic Church lobbied against the Child Victims Act for several years, but earlier in 2019 dropped its opposition. And many dioceses now say they support the victims and won't stand in the way of their lawsuits. The Albany Bishop, Edward Scharfenberger, released a video message.
We support all survivors in the justice and healing that they seek.
Scharfenberger says victims should not be afraid to speak truth to power. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
A longtime Great Barrington, Massachusetts public servant was arraigned in Berkshire Superior Court Wednesday. Prosecutors allege she stole more than $100,000 from the town. WAMC's Berkshire Bureau Chief Josh Landes was in court.
Deborah Ball, 63, worked for the town of Great Barrington as an assistant treasurer and tax collector for almost 35 years. Before her firing this past March, after an audit by independent firm Scanlon & Associates revealed the theft.
The audit is still in progress.
Berkshire District Attorney Andrea Harrington's office obtained the indictment against Ball on July 31st from a grand jury.
It was a pretty extensive audit that was conducted by a professional accounting firm. They are alleging at this point that the amount is over $100,000, but there could potentially be additional amounts that are discovered.
Ball is believed to have worked alone on what Harrington's office described as a Ponzi scheme involving real estate and excise taxes paid in cash to the town by residents and business owners. She allegedly attempted to cover up the losses using other townspeople's check payments. The audit has uncovered theft going back as far as 2012.
It's going to probably take some time to even determine the extent of who the victims are.
Harrington suggested that her office had more than enough to pursue a case against Ball.
I don't know that it's really necessary to continue the search in terms of the criminal prosecution. We feel that we have the facts and the circumstances that we need to make a compelling case, which was presented to the grand jury.
The official charges the defendant faces are embezzlement by a municipal officer and larceny over $1,200 by single scheme.
She used her position with the town as a tax collector and violated her fiduciary duties and violated the public trust, which is why we take this case very seriously. And we've done an extensive investigation. I want to thank Great Barrington Police Department and detectives from the State Police Detective Unit assigned to my office who have worked very diligently in investigating this case and discovering the facts of a fairly complicated scheme to defraud the town of Great Barrington and the taxpayers.
In a statement, Great Barrington Town Manager Mark Pruhinsky said the town was working closely with both auditors and authorities on the investigation, and that it is bonded and insured for these kinds of losses. Quote, the town has implemented proper controls to prevent this type of incident from happening again in the future. Ball, who pleaded not guilty, is represented by attorney and two-time DA candidate Judith Knight. They declined to comment at the courthouse Wednesday. Ball was released without bail on her own recognizance before her next court appearance on January 8th for a pretrial hearing. Reporting from the WAMC News Berkshire Bureau at the Beacon Cinema, I'm Josh Landes.
Well, despite years of effort to improve the relationship between law enforcement and residents of Albany, mistrust remains. That's according to a new survey from the Center for Law and Justice. WAMC's Capital Region Bureau Chief Dave Lucas reports.
During the spring of 2019, the Center for Law and Justice conducted a survey of some 250 Albany residents regarding public safety, law enforcement, and community police relations. The 41-page report is called Pathway to Reformative Change: Public Safety, Law Enforcement, and the Albany Community. Center for Law and Justice Executive Director Alice Green says the survey questionnaire solicited residents' responses to several questions.
About the police department, the district attorney's office, and of course, LEED. We did the interviews in a couple of ways. One, the questionnaire was on the internet, our website, and people responded to that. We also interviewed people who were attending a number of community functions, like a fair here or a meeting there, and we wanted to make sure that they felt that they could respond to the questions voluntarily and with some privacy issues because they were raised, that we wanted to make sure they felt that they were with anonymous responses.
Green announced the study's major findings.
There's a great deal of mistrust between community people and the Albany Police Department. There's a great deal of mistrust between the Albany County District Attorney's Office and the community. And it ran along racial lines. People who were African American or Latino felt that they were certainly not trusting of the Albany Police Department and the District Attorney's Office.
Green called it a great disappointment that a highly touted police initiative that was rolled out in April 2016 is not apparently reaching survey respondents.
We thought more people in the community by now, after 3 years of operation, would know about the LEAD program, the Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program. And even though something around 50% of the people were aware of it, we had thought that we were able to carry out a pretty good educational program and that more of them would know about it.
Green added there was some indication from survey responses that there is confusion as to whether the center is still involved with community policing as a philosophy. She says many either did not know about community policing or were convinced that the center was not engaged in it.
We did, in this report, lay out 17 recommendations that were in response to what we heard and what our experience tells us.
The report's recommendations include stepping up efforts to educate and promote LEAD, acknowledging structural racism and educating the public about racism and civil rights history, requiring more transparency and clarification of policies from police and the DA, including allowing the public to view use of force records, along with the need to find ways that law enforcement agencies and the criminal justice system may identify and address the presence of systemic racism. Green says that lines of communication have been strained between the center and local officials. She noted that Albany Mayor Kathy Sheehan, the Albany Police Department, and the District Attorney's Office were invited to attend the press conference. None were present. Albany Police Chief Eric Hawkins says he never got the invitation and doesn't know where the wires got crossed.
This is a surprise to me that there's a perception that there's a lack of communication, and you know, between, again, not just Dr. Green's organization, but any organization. You know, one of the things that made a priority for me, Chief, is to have open lines of communication with anybody in this community.
Hawkins says he is reviewing the report, which is posted at wamc.org. The mayor's office is also reviewing the report and its findings. D.A. David Soar's office responded to a request for comment by email. Quote, yes, we received a letter on Monday with the invitation. The D.A. had a previously scheduled meeting at the time of the event. We are still not in receipt of the final report. Dave Lucas, WAMC News.
And finally, WAMC has marked this week's 50th anniversary of the Woodstock Music Festival in a number of ways, including the release of a new episode from A New York Minute in History.
That idea, I think, was born out of the series of concerts that took place on a farm just outside of town in Woodstock. They were very low-key, kind of out in the country. The stage, I think, was maybe a foot off the ground or something like that. And the draw, you know, between 200 and 500 people, it was not a big deal, but local talent in Woodstock in those days with people like Van Morrison and the Blues Magoos and Richie Havens, and so the shows were amazing. And it was just, you know, occurred to me that was the perfect way to see music, was out in the country under the stars and in nature.
To learn the story behind the iconic concert and why it was held in New York's Hudson Valley, head to WAMCpodcast.org or search A New York Minute in History on your favorite podcast app. That does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Remember to stay subscribed for the latest from the Northeast. Till next time, I'm Ian Pickus.